Hi, I'm Sarah Wall, and today we introduce the Walking Wisdom Podcast. Before we get into our conversation, I want to thank the Card Network, Australia's go-to gift card provider. They have all the best brands on just one card, from fashion to beauty to all of the latest tech and gaming. The choice is yours. Today's guest is Megan Anderson, past Australian Diamonds netball player and now the 2021 Firebirds coach in the Suncorp Super Netball. This podcast is designed to support coaches. We encourage you to put your earphones in and walk with us as we share our coaching tips and solutions to netball scenarios to help you guys get back into netball stronger and wiser. Hi, Megs. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
For the woman of the hour, we're so excited that the announcement of the Firebirds coach has come your way. You're feeling pumped?
Yeah, very pumped and excited. A little bit scared at the same time, but that comes with something new. So I'm just looking forward to getting up there.
I'm really excited you got the role. Today, we're really looking forward to hearing how you got to where you are today, your playing history, and just some tips for our community coaches. But are you ready to come for a walk with us today?
Yeah, sounds good.
So, Megs, do you want to share about your playing history from club when you first started the game all the way to being an Australian Diamond?
Well, I grew up in a place called Yumina, which is on the central coast of New South Wales, about an hour-ish north of Sydney, and played all my junior netball there up until about 19. But then I changed to a Sydney club in Sutherland to play in the top league in New South Wales. And so I had a really good coach at Woi Woi, and I think that was the main thing that kind of propelled me on my journey as a netballer, because he encouraged me to try out for a schoolgirls state team, which I got in. So he was just a great coach, and I still take aspects of his coaching with me along the way. And once I got into the state league in the city, then started to make some state teams and underage Australian teams, and then the Commonwealth Bank Trophy started, and I got a gig with the Swifts. And it all kind of just went from there, but there was lots of ups and downs along the way, and sitting on benches and not making teams and all of that sort of stuff. So it was definitely not smooth sailing, but lots of lessons along the way for me, that's for sure.
Yeah, and having that experience of a player, I think that well-rounded approach of bench time, competing at the top level, do you think that's helped with the way you now coach?
Yeah, I certainly think that I feel like I'm a bit more relatable to the players, not having had a dream run, but I also know what it feels like to sit on the bench or to have someone better than you in front of you in the team. And I think that sort of perspective is really important, because every 10 or 12 players in the team are really important, no matter how much game time they're getting. It all adds to the culture and the strength of the group. And I think that's really important in knowing how to deal with and keep encouraging and still develop those players, because just because they're not on the court right now doesn't mean that they won't be in, 2 years' time or 6 months' time or even next month if someone gets an injury. So every player has to be ready, really.
Yeah, that's so true. Power of communication and nailing that skill and just to be informed, I think I can really relate, as well as when you've been in that position, that might be a bench player and then you get to be that starting player. If you're communicated to, you're made feel important that someone's giving you that time, you really can expect big things from them, and it just helps with general mental well-being. Moving into your coaching role now, when you finished at the elite level, or just players in general, and there's players that have played the game and then all of a sudden they're told to step into a coaching role, it doesn't mean you can coach if you can play. What sort of steps did you take from playing days to then become a coach?
I agree with that. And the Mystics, Mystics coach asked me if I would come back as a specialist coach. So I didn't really know that I wanted to be a coach, but I said yes, because I didn't know what else to do after I retired. And I really enjoyed that year, and she involved me straight away in all of the planning and the processes involved in planning out that next year. So I really learned a lot from her and enjoyed it. And then when I got back to New South Wales the following year. Then I started on my doing my assessment level for all of the coaching qualifications, and just kind of continued learning along the way. I still didn't know what I wanted to do with my coaching, but once I reached the next level, I just, you know, I think I'm like that as a person. I was just like, okay, what else am I going to learn? What can I learn? What do I need to do next? And so I was just always finding new things that I needed to do, and new opportunities to keep, you know, keep me improving in my coaching, and just kind of work my way through those levels and took those jobs where they suited my family life at the time as well, because I'd spent, you know, 10, 15 years away from family and traveling for netball. So I was kind of at a point in my life where I just wanted to be at home a lot as well and not miss things. So I was kind of just working the coaching around my, yeah, my life at the time.
Yeah, I think that's a great message. I think everyone coming out of COVID's had, you know, all that family time and really reassessing what they want to do next, whether they want to give their time, and whether people are coaching a voluntary role or you're professionally doing it, you know, you're deciding to invest time into doing something. And that's why I'm going to ask you this next three scenarios, because it is, you know, you're putting yourself in the shoes of someone that's just finished playing, taking it right back. I'm picking up, you're going to recommend them to do their accreditation for coaching. But let's just say we jump online now, we get started with our accreditation. How does that physically look at club level? Would you start with juniors or you jump straight into seniors? And what does that look like to start out?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think doing your accreditation helps. It just gives you that confidence that you have, you know, you're communicating the right message and you're communicating in the right way. I don't know that there's a specific age group that you should start on necessarily, because for me, I prefer the players a little bit older, and some people prefer younger players. So I don't think to start on a certain age group matters. I just think start with the age group that you think you can communicate the best with. And just go seek out opportunities to learn from other people. So if you can go and watch some rep sessions from coaches that have had a lot more experience than you, or even, you know, your Metro League or Premier League, whatever is around your area, go and watch those coaches and sit behind the bench and listen to what they say, and just pick up little bits and pieces along the way and try and incorporate them into how you are as a coach. You don't have to copy people. I think that's the thing that used to make me nervous as an up-and-coming coach. I'd listen to someone and go, oh my goodness, they know so much, I don't know that, I'm never gonna be like that. But you know, you as a coach will offer other things, and so just picking up little pieces along the way, it helps you be more well-rounded. But you never have to be like somebody else, you just be you and go in that direction.
Yeah, fantastic advice. So let's just say you're coaching a team right now. I'm going to throw some scenarios at you that we constantly get asked at NetFit, and we just love to hear your opinion. And as you said, like, you know, your advice that you're sharing today is through your experience, and we value that. We think you're pretty awesome, and we can't wait not only to see what you do as an assistant coach, but we know, given the top role, we want to hear what you would do in this situation. So player comes to you and tells you she's losing interest in netball, what would you do?
I think the first thing would try and be to figure out why. So not basically saying why straight up, but just having conversation with her about her life, her school, anything else she's doing outside of sport, to just try and get to the bottom of it, because it could be anything. It can be her losing confidence at school, it could be, you know, something happening at home, it could be body image issues, anything like that. So trying to get to the bottom of it first would be where I would start. And then getting from that, whether, you know, it might be my training session's really boring and she doesn't like it anymore. So, you know, whatever you get from that conversation, I think would be a good starting point. But you really, hopefully you'll know your players a little bit before you start, and you can get quickly onto trying to figure out a solution related exactly to why she's losing interest. But just always giving them, you know, the benefit of the honesty in the conversation, I think would help them engage more. And engagement is a massive part of people enjoying netball.
Absolutely. Now, moving to out of your control, which is, you know, maybe your group and you're putting all this effort into the actual core group that you're training, but then a parent comes to you and says, you know, either they're not happy with what's going on or they want answers, and, you know, you're thinking that maybe the kid's happy and it's fine. You're confronted with a difficult parent conversation. How do you handle that?
There's often lots of these conversations, and I think what needs to happen in the beginning is, when you take on a new team, is to you know, set the standards and the expectations of yourself as a coach right from the start. So I think you need to set the expectations on the players and what sort of effort level you expect from them, how you're going to run the team, how you're going to run your substitutions. Are you going to play people, you know, equal court time? Are you going to reward them for turning up and the effort and the applicability at training? All that sort of stuff, so everybody knows that beforehand. And then also having a conversation with the parents at the start to explain all that to them and what you expect from the parents and the players and how you're going to run things. So I think if that expectation is there in the beginning, you've got that to refer back to. But also, again, just finding out the reason. It might just be that the parent, you know, is coming from a good place and they want their daughter on the court and she's not on the court. So I think just keeping the conversation nice and honest and open, and how you're viewing the child and what they're doing at training and what they're doing on the game. And if you've got some specific feedback, then that's really going to help. So keeping records from each of your training sessions on maybe effort levels and skill levels and how they're improving and what they can do to improve will always be good for you if you need to refer back to things like that for parents, because parents, I find, like the, you know, the hard and fast facts. They like to know exactly what's going on and all of that sort of stuff, not wishy-washy answers.
Yeah, Meg, it's fantastic listening to you. And yeah, it's hopefully coaches out there are taking a few quick notes. And, you know, even if you are a volunteer and do put your hand up for these coaching roles, sometimes we're not equipped to deal with these things that happen, but just have some club, you know, maybe it's a whole club expectation document that goes out to families and really looking after young coaches that come in as well that haven't developed those skill sets already about having these conversations. But as you said, on the, you know, positive side of parents, they just want the best for their kids, so they have the right to ask, whether you're a paid coach or you're a volunteer coach. And I just think the main message I've got from you so far is communication and honesty. And yeah, if that's all, you know, in place, I think the world's your oyster.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's move on to the next scenario. Your team is sort of winning, losing, it's up and down, but all of a sudden they start to lose motivation on game day. How do you, in the middle of a game, they might be down, how do you set goals? Do you have, you know, quarterly, you know, targets that you need to hit? How do you keep your team engaged and motivated game day?
I think it has to go back to the process of what you're trying to achieve, and I think not the outcome. So the process in terms of, and again, if you've set it up pretty explicitly at the beginning of the season, what you think that you can achieve as individuals and as a team, and then keep referring back to that process. So I think the key is to have lots of little goals along the way and not have winning as the outcome goal, so that, you know, players can realise, okay, so I've added this skill to my game, or, you know, my shooting was at this point, but now it's at this point. You know, as in our centre pass conversion rate was at 60, but now it's at 67. So we're actually improving each game, but we're just not quite getting those wins on the board, just so that they know that the processes are working and to keep continuing. Because I think the worst thing when you're losing is you lose motivation because you think that what you're doing, you know, all the effort you're putting in is not working, when really it could be, but it's just not resulting in a win. So always referring back to those little processes along the way and celebrating the little wins, so that you can keep that motivation up, I think.
Yeah, that's it's cool to actually articulate it like that. When, you know, we assess when after a game, say at the Giants, we'd come in, my coach at the time, Julie Fitzgerald, would break down the quarters. Sometimes the midcourt had to win that quarter because we got the conversions. But if you're giving advice to clubs out there, let's just take it to a huddle and it swifts into the second quarter. Everyone's got their hands in. What are the kind of things, is it broken down targets? Everyone knows their targets. Is it trying to hit a certain goal? And obviously that's being communicated at the start of the game, but what sort of targets, say if a coach gets in a team huddle with their team, they're coaching the Swifts, what would they hear?
I don't really like to set targets in terms of goals to get per quarter or goals to keep the opposition to. I think that makes the players lose a little bit of focus in what they have to actually do to achieve those goals. I think if you focus on the process again, I think the outcome takes care of itself. So I would really just be focusing on the attack end, saying, you know, we want to get the depth on the second phase. You know, we want one over the line to have that staggered timing over for the centre pass so that the second person can get deep on the second phase, you know, whether depending what the shooter's like, we want the shooter to stay in the circle because we think a one-on-one we can win that battle. So making sure that the midcourts get to the circle edge and deliver that good ball. And defensively, I think it's really important for defences to work as a unit, so not individually. So making sure that they're doing their job in keeping their players wide and to the sideline, but also being aware of maybe the shooter coming up the middle or you know, the double plays that may happen with a centre and a wing attack, just being aware of that as well. So working together as a centre wing defence combination. So yeah, I think just those little processes to help you get to that end result.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So for everyone listening, it's like we're right here in the huddle and you guys are going to be back out on court soon next year. Instead of maybe going to those targets, we need to hit a certain amount of goals. Maybe that's dated coaching. What we need to keep doing is going over our own game, our own processes. And that's awesome, Megs. I think I really take a lot away from that too. That's exactly what we would do in the huddle. We actually, you know, stick to our game plan. If there's a particular thing we've worked on at training, that's what we're doing. So yeah, really avoiding those targets. That's interesting. The next one, the scenario off the court, how would you keep your players engaged in more of an off court? Do you do certain activities? Do you like to mix it up at training? What sort of things do you have?
Yeah, I think keeping training interesting is really important when it's a long season. And I know it was this year, especially with COVID, I think mixing it up is always good. I always try and remind all the club coaches that, you know, you don't have to stand there and practice passing. You can do any sort of game that involves passing and catching, that it will improve their passing and catching. So it can be any fun game or activity that you like, but you're still working on those essential skills that you need in netball. And as long as you continue to coach, you know, the skill of the pass and the catch during the game, I think you can get away with having a bit of fun, you know, while doing those essential skills, because sometimes the players get a bit bored just practicing passing and catching. They just want to get to the fun stuff. So we need to really keep mixing that up and make that fun, but still coach it at the same time.
So just all these fun, I mean, that's what I pretty much base NetFit off, is all those things, Megs, is like, how do you continue to have fun with your training and sneak in those competitions to really make, I don't know, work on your fitness as well when you're enjoying it. Mm-hmm. You're more inclined to do it. Now, there was a real buzz and a vibe around the Swifts. It's a young team. Everyone looked like they were having fun, big personalities, I guess teenagers to young adults. Bryony, Anita and yourself did such a good job. Coaching adults and teens in 2020 and sort of in the next few years, is there a different skill the coaches need to evolve?
Yeah, I think just the communication. So I think, you know, as older coaches, we probably were brought up on conversations, but and then also towards the back end, maybe email communication. But the kids these days communicate via text or some sort of messaging platform. So I think it's just knowing which way they like to communicate. And setting the team up with some sort of communication app that you know that they're going to read and reply to, and not bombarding them with too much information because they just won't read it. But also, I think kids these days, they like a lot of feedback, and they kind of want that immediate feedback too. So, you know, like when they're playing their video games, they get some sort of reward or feedback every 7 minutes or something crazy like that. So I think, you know, communicating with them, I think we need to give short, sharp and concise feedback quite often. And whether that's straight after a training session or straight after a game, and then give them a tip earlier in the week closer to the training session on what they need to work on. I think keeping it really brief and in the method that they like to receive it is a good idea. And maybe even just short clips from the game that they can view on their phone and have a look at before training or a game is a good idea as well.
Yeah, and it's evolving with the times. It's a no one can ever be stuck in their ways. And a lot of the conversation at the start was talking about self-learning next, but we're all learning every day. And I think being a great listener as well to the group that they've got, you know, understanding maybe what your group is and having those discussions, as you said, at the start of the season. A couple more questions to go. Three best qualities of a coach.
Honesty is my absolute number one. Just from my time as a player, knowing that, you know, I really value honesty. I don't want to be told, you know, you need to do this, and then when you do that, it's something different. So really value honesty, even if it's a hard conversation. I think being honest with your players is really important. Just being really specific in terms of feedback. So nothing fluffy like, oh, you just need to score more goals or, you know, anything like that. If it's something specific, at least it gives the player something to work towards. And then again, just being open in that communication and giving them those steps to keep improving and keep working towards the ultimate goal that you want them to get to. So I think breaking it down and showing them that it's easy to get to if they just slowly achieve those little steps. So probably honesty, the good communication, and fun, I guess, making the training session fun.
And you've heard that for someone even at the top of the game, it's all about having that fun. I love exactly what you said, the legs with what you've said there for qualities. You've left enough legacy of our sport. You could put your feet up and you're done. You've inspired me. You've inspired so many that have watched me. I know there's more to your career as a coach and an influencer of our game, but what is it? What legacy do you want to leave on our sport?
I think one of the things that I really love to do as a coach is to inspire people to really think on the court. And I know that you know, the fitness and S&C side is really important, but these days everybody's as fit and fast as everybody else, so you really need to think out on court. So I love teaching players how to do that and to pick the right moments in the game to do things, and to, you know, outsmarting your opponent is one of the best things about playing netball, and I love helping players figure out that with regard to what their strengths and weaknesses are and what their opposition's strengths and weaknesses are. So you really have to know your opposition, know your own game, and figuring out that puzzle each week is exciting. So hoping that I can inspire people to want to keep learning and not just going through the motions on the court.
Megs, just on this one, the legacy you've left with me is it might be, you know, a massive game and a goal in it. I'd look at the bench and look at you, and you're always so calm, and, you know, you're always, and for me, I thought to have my first guest on something like this, I thought, well, you're such a leader in this new generation. And, you know, I was a highly, you know, strong athlete that just was worried if I made a mistake. And I know so many are now, and it's getting worse with this new sort of wave of what COVID's brought out in so many young people, this sort of unknown and, you know, waves of the anxiety around performance. So if there's anything, you know, legacy you've left with me is that consistency, that peacefulness. You know, it's okay, Sarah, like, it's okay, team, that we've got this, stick to our processes. And I think it's a wonderful quality that you've got. Now, a final question, and I think COVID will leave a legacy on all of us in some way. What is it from COVID?
Oh, definitely to be adaptable. I thought I was before, but I think after COVID, you have to, you know, I learned a higher level of adaptability. And I also learned that I'm definitely not a kindergarten teacher. So I knew that I liked coaching at the high performance level, and it just kind of confirmed it for me because I was absolutely horrible kindergarten teacher. And probably then on that same thing is to learn, I learned a lot more patience, I think, and a little bit more understanding on how people learn differently, because my twins learn very, very differently. And so, you know, it really highlighted that fact for me that everybody learns so differently, and to be patient with people and not expect them to do it how you like it to be done, which can be hard sometimes.
Well, that's, such a great way to finish the podcast today. Thank you for walking with me. And we're very grateful we can give you a little voucher from the Card Network. It's a pamper voucher, so you can go and relax and put your feet up for an hour or so. But thank you so much. And we look forward to watching you do your thing this year, next year for the Firebirds. And we wish you all the very best.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you all for tuning in to our Walking Wisdom podcast, and make sure you check out the Card Network gift cards. Head to www.thecardnetwork.com.au.